a little bit different day than we normally do. It's our year in review, and we do this annually, and we just take a couple of minutes and walk back through both world events and also some of the things that happened here at Sierra, and just kind of give you an opportunity to reflect, and I hope that you're able to laugh, and I also hope that thinking back through some of the things that we've talked about will also kind of move you back in your soul, thinking about God and His goodness and some of the things that He's taught you this year. So if you don't mind, let's start with a word of prayer. Father, I thank you for the privilege I had this week of not only celebrating the birth of your son, Jesus, but also having the privilege of really being able to work back through the 53 different messages that I and John and Dan have had the privilege, and Corbett, have had the privilege of doing here this year. And how many good and challenging weeks we had together. So, Father, thanks for bringing us through this last year. Thanks especially for the faithfulness of this church and people's generosity, both financially, but especially with their time and energy. And it's all culminated to make what I think has been another outstanding year of ministry here at Sierra. So thanks for giving us an opportunity to kind of reflect back. And even as we do that, would you help us to be able to laugh at the funny moments, but also that you would teach us from just kind of reflecting back over the things that we learned together this year. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. If you're new with us, my name is Noah, and I'm one of the pastors. There's three of us that are teaching pastors, and we just sort of rotate through weeks. So you're going to see some of the slides and some of the messages that all three of us did and some of the highlights from it. So I hope, first of all, I hope Santa brought you everything you wanted. Inevitably, that didn't happen, but hey, it's worth throwing out there. You, like me, I'm sure you get some great cards during the year, and I get some great cards from a good friend of mine, Casey Howard, through all throughout the year. And this card was the Christmas card that he sent me, and it's a typical scene in heading into Jerusalem. And you know, it used to be a big deal to put bumper stickers on your car, you know, that kind of bragged about your kids, but that sort of became old hat, so we stopped doing that. But there is sort of this subtle competitive spirit that parents have, and here we have two moms, and they're on their camels coming into Jerusalem, and the mother on the right is Mary, and they have their own bumper stickers, and they have their own ways of bragging. Well, if it isn't Joseph and Mary. So I love this bumper sticker. Yeah, that's great. Doesn't matter what you got, no matter how accomplished your kids are, you can't measure up to Mary and Joseph's son. So Merry Christmas, guys. Year in review. Here we go. So I always start off, I'm always curious about this because you guys are subjected to having to listen to us a lot. So who do you think was the longest this year? I just go back to the webpage and I look, all of our services are on there, the times for each one. Who do you think was the longest this year? I hear a couple Johns out there. I like that. It was not John, and it was not me. And it was Dan for the third year running. Now, the reason this is actually of interest is because this year, the three longest messages all belong to Dan. Okay, what about the shortest service? Who's the soul of brevity here? How many Dans? Raise your hand. There's always a couple of people that just throw that out. Dan isn't here, so he's not impressed. How many of you said I was the shortest? Come on, help me out. Everybody thinks John? Well, you'd be correct about that. And again, the three shortest messages all belong to John. Did any of you notice that John this year seemed, he was happier this year than he's been in years? Did you guys notice that? There was a good reason for all the smiles and the heartfelt, you know, warmth that John greeted with all year. Because John, as you know, is a deeply troubled fisherman. And every year we do a pastor's fishing tournament. And this year, lo and behold, John was the champion. Fortunately, he's not here. He's not here to swell his head yet, but he will be here later on today. So, and I don't know if John was happier because he got first or because I got last this year. But both were a bonus for him either way. Well, I decided to add a new category this year. I wanted to do, since we're a casual church and we dress down, I figured I'd give an award away like I do every year, and I do it this year for the best dressed person on staff. So we wrote out all the lists, and the pastor sat down together, and we started at the top and sort of worked our way down. And, of course, it was easy to cross off John and Dan off the list of being best dressed. Rex didn't help himself. I got eliminated fourth, and we just kind of worked our way down through it. By the process of elimination, finally we came to our youngest staff member, Nick Stewart. And even Nick got crossed off the list. So there is no... there was no best dress. That was Nick from the children's ministry play this year. And Nick has been an amazing, amazing addition to our staff. And I don't know if Nick was here. He's playing drums this morning. But Nick, thanks for your hard work and your service and the way you push all of us here on staff to work harder. Thank you, Nick. You guys know how many different series we did this year? Take a guess. Last year we did three different series that we worked through. This year we worked through seven different series. Isn't that amazing? And the series on the bottom left there, Moses, is where we'll be picking up here in next week. Dan's got a great intro for you about a message about water. So this is always a fly through the year day. How many slides do you think I got for you today? You won't want to see this. 81 slides. So let's get... Fortunately, we've already worked through a couple of them. So first series of the year, we talked about... we started in the book of Genesis. Great place to start. And we talked about what does Genesis tell us about God and about life. And I started the series by talking about this graffiti artist named Banksy. And you can tell a lot about his politics from his graffiti, and he's gone all around the world. I showed you a whole bunch of his works, and the thing that's interesting about this guy is that nobody really knows who he is, and he's done big murals all over New York, especially in London, and people don't know who he is. I'll tell you, if you wondered about this, it pays to be a good graffiti artist. This guy auctions off a lot of his works. And a couple years ago, he sold several for $500,000. He did one called The Space Girl and the Bird that sold for $575,000 two years ago. Crazy, huh? So the thing about it is this guy, he does all of this artwork all around the world, and you could tell a lot about his politics, but you really don't know who he is. And I contrasted that with the reality that God is also an artist. But we do know who he is because he went to great lengths to be known. And we explored about all the different myriads of ways that God has displayed both his handiwork and also explained to us who he is. And we talked about, we started by looking way out into the universe. And one of the ways I did this to show you how big the universe is and take like, I took the sun and I said, if you boiled the sun down to a basketball, and I brought out a tape measure and I said, another star that's in our galaxy that is called Betelgeuse, that dwarfs the size of the sun, and I ran a tape measure more than 100 feet from over here almost to that wall over there, just to give you an idea that as big as we think our sun is, it pales in comparison to some of the other stars that God has created in the universe. And that would be the size of the sun compared to some of these other big ones. So Betelgeuse, what you see on there, Betelgeuse is twice the size of Earth's orbit around the sun. If the Earth were the size of a golf ball, now, I, even though I did this message earlier this year, I went back and I had to re-look at this number because I can't fathom that this is true. If you boil down the Earth, the size of the Earth, to fit inside Betelgeuse, it would hold 262 trillion Earths inside that star. That's how big it is. If you think of it in terms of the Empire State Building, you could stack six of them, and if you could be at the top and you could look down, Earth would be smaller than a golf ball. So we went through this just to say, look at the magnificence and the grandeur and the power of what God has made by his hand. And I think there's a sense in which a lot of us would think that because he's so big, that how in the world could he care about us? And so I said, you know, it's amazing because not only has God made the grandeur of the universe, but also you think about the detail that he took in creating us. And I talked about the eye, and I use this quote from an eye doctor who says, although accounting for just 1/4,000th of an adult's weight, it's the medium which processes some 80% of the information received by its owner from the outside world. The tiny retina contains about 130 million rod-shaped cells which detect light instantly and transmits impulses to the visual cortex of the brain by means of some 1 million nerve fibers. Well, nearly 6 million cone-shaped cells do the same job, but respond specifically to color variation. The eye can handle 500,000 messages simultaneously and are kept clear by ducts producing just the right amount of fluid with which the lids can both clean both eyes simultaneously in 1/5,000th of a second. So God on the huge scale and also on the detail. And I use that to say God, he wants to be known as an artist. And his and the high watermark of what he's created is us. And he wants to be known, and the way that he created for us to know who he is he gave us his son, Jesus. And we did spend a lot of time talking about it. One of the Sundays, it was great. We had Mark Vaughn come up, and he did pottery, and we talked about how we were made in the image of the living God, his handiwork. Dan came up a couple weeks after that, and he talked about not only are we God's handiwork, but we were made in his image and his likeness. And a big part of that is God is relational, and God wants to have a relationship with us. And he had three closing points. He says, we're built to experience a deep personal relationship with God. You were also made for a deep unity with other human beings. And you need relationships with people that are different from you. And he read a letter from a missionary that we had that was hosting families from the Middle East. I don't know if you remember that, but it's on our webpage, and you go back and you look at it. It'll bring tears to your eyes to think about the power that God uses to shape us and give us a bigger picture of the world and what's going on in the world, and a bigger appreciation for God and who he is and what's going on in the world through other people that are very different from us and have had different experiences from us. One of the things we find out as we go into the book of Genesis is you find out, despite God's good intent, something went horribly wrong. And that was rebellion and human rebellion. And sin, John said in one of his messages called East of Eden that he did in March, he said, sin is powerful and invasive. And he was talking about just after the garden experience, Adam and Eve's children, one of them murders the other one. And John talks about how it doesn't take long for that rebellion to spill out in the worst possible ways. And you would think, because the Bible is such an old book, you would think, surely we've engineered how to make the world a better place, right? Because we're so much smarter, so much technology, so much civil advancement. Surely we've figured out how to overcome those sorts of things, right? Sad, isn't it? Does this sound familiar? Our youth now love luxuries. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for their elders, and they love to chatter instead of exercise. Children are now tyrants, not the servants of their households. They no longer rise when their elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, gobble up their food, and tyrannize their teachers. And this was all written 400 years before Jesus. How far we have come, right? Rousseau, thinking about the mess of the world, this is what Rousseau said. Civilization is a hopeless race, is a hopeless race to discover remedies for the evil it produces. Everything is good as it comes from the hand of the maker of the world, but degenerates once it gets into the hands of men. This is not true when we look around, and this is the sad testimony, I think, of the world, of what we've learned, and how left to our own demises and our own solutions, how pitifully short we come to be able to solve the real problems that the world faces today. Well, God had a remedy for this, and we talked about this, about the flood, and how God wasn't going to let it, he doesn't let bad behavior go unmeted out. And Dan had this really interesting illustration about the rainbow. And he talked about in the Hebrew how the bow, the rainbow is the same word for bow and arrow. But rather than pointing down at earth, it's pointed up at God. And ultimately, God's wrath is satisfied not through the wiping out of mankind via the flood, but ultimately God's wrath is satisfied because he made provision in a way that we could never satisfy God's anger at our rebellion. And he pointed the bow at himself. And of course, his son willingly took upon the consequences for the mess that the world has become. And he says, "No one can kill me without my consent. I lay down my life voluntarily." That's the good news. Despite the mess of the world, God had a remedy in a way that we couldn't fix, and he took it upon himself. The rainbow is a sign of a promise, of a covenant. And one of the things that, as I was working back through this last year, one of the things that I found to be true over and over and over again is despite our failures and our moral inability to live up to the standards of God, God is so patient and he's so good that despite those things, he's still willing not just to contend for us, but to make right where we can't make right of the world ourselves. Well, the three top stories this year where I'm going to talk about, and one of them is Islamic radical terrorism around the world. One of the big stories during the year was sort of the eradication of Christians in the Middle East. And one of the big stories was the death of the 21 Coptic Christians that were beheaded, that they made a video of them, put it up online. And of course, the other one was the two terrorist attacks in Paris. The one at the Charlie Hebdo, the satirical magazine, and then the other one just a couple of weeks ago that killed 130 people. And, you know, the sad thing that I was thinking about as I was looking at the top stories of the year is both Christians and Jews and Muslims all claim the same father that we've been studying, which is Abraham. And we talked about this, how more than half the world's religions and half the world's people today claim Abraham as the founder of their faith. And what an important person he is, no matter what religion you of those three religions you claim. And Abraham, we spent an enormous amount of time studying him early in the year. Abraham is such an important figure, not just in the Old Testament, but just in the New Testament. Abraham, as important as King David is, Abraham's name is mentioned 72 different times in the New Testament. The only person that's talked about more is Moses. Now, Abraham is such an important figure because God, after about 2,000 years passed between Adam and Abraham, and God comes to Abraham and he makes him an extraordinary promise. And he promises that he's going to give him a legacy of people. But the problem, remember, the problem with the promise that God gave Abraham was he had no children, right? He had no children. He was like, hey, this is a great promise. In fact, it was sort of like winning the publisher's clearinghouse. You know, you watch it and you see it on the news and you think, glad it happened to somebody, right? Abraham was that somebody back then that God came to and made an enormous promise. But it wasn't without big obstacles in his own life because he didn't have any children. So Abraham is faced with a really difficult decision. And it's a word that we talk about all the time in church. And it's the word faith. And whether or not you're going to trust God or not. Even in the midst of where it could be the most challenging situations where you can't imagine how God could fulfill or be good to you or redeem you, maybe if you've made a mess of your life, right? How in the world could God do that? And so we talk about trusting him by faith. Well, Abraham had to do that. And John had a great illustration of the difference between believing something and actually putting your faith into something. I mean, you use the example of the guy who crossed the Niagara Falls on a tightrope. And after he went back and forth, his publicist said, how many of you think he could do it with, and he did it with a wheelbarrow, how many of you think he could do this with somebody in the wheelbarrow or on his shoulders? And of course, all the people that said, I bet he can do it. I bet he can do it. When it came time for someone to get up on his shoulders or get in the wheelbarrow, there weren't volunteers, right? See, and that's the difference between having belief that someone can do something and actually putting your faith in someone. One of the things that people wonder about is they think, well, you know, I'm a person of doubt. Who doesn't have doubt? Everybody in here has had doubt about God, about his existence, about the amazing grace that he has for us via giving his son Jesus to die for us. And I think a lot of times we wonder, you know, because we do have doubt, how does God look at me? Can I be acceptable to him because of the doubt? And one of the things that we found out is that God is not disturbed by our doubts or even the questions that we may have. In fact, being honest about our doubts and our questions allows us to respond with genuine faith. It doesn't do us any good to hide or bury that stuff or think that God is somehow displeased when we have these questions. And we found that out again and again and again through the characters that we studied this year. Well, I think the biggest national story that we had this year was the story about the Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriages. And we actually spent a couple weeks referencing or talking about the implications of that. And one of the messages that we did was one where we were talking about culture, and the impetus for it was thinking about the Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner phenomenon in our culture today. And we talked about how big a part in our lives our personal feelings have in guiding our decisions in life, and especially our ideas about right or wrong. We don't look outside ourselves for some truth to tell us what's right or wrong. We look inside and we determine truth based upon how we feel. And so I think one of the best illustrations that we used all year to talk about the danger of trusting your feelings as your navigator for life came from looking at the death of John F. Kennedy Jr. And he bought a plane and he was a qualified pilot, but he wasn't instrument qualified. And in 1999, he died on the way to his cousin Philip's wedding. And his wife and sister died in the crash also. And the NTSB that investigated found out that he had, what's it called? I wrote it down. He had a very common, the accident was caused by horizon dysphoria, which is your inability to tell the horizon, the correct horizon, from what you feel like the plane is actually doing. So you may feel like the plane is going down when it's actually going up because you're distorted, your sense of reality is distorted about where the true horizon is. So you can actually be going down when you feel like you're going up. And apparently it's a really common problem that pilots have. And the only solution to that problem, the only solution is to not be governed by your feelings at that moment, but to look at the instruments of the plane and trust what the instruments tell you. A pilot writing about this very thing, he says, here's the crux of the matter. The pilot's emotions drowned out the flight's instrument's story about banking and diving at high speeds, and screams out, no way, it can't be. I'm actually flying straight and level. I know it. I feel it's true. Reason and emotions are at war. Recovering from unusual altitude consists of one essential belief. Your feelings cannot be trusted as the final authority on what the airplane is doing. Your mind is boss. The instruments are your window on reality. And you desperately need to understand that the data they provide, the only power that can grasp and integrate this evidence correctly is reason, which evaluates experience by logic. Our feelings indulged without examination will kill us. And see, that's the very story we found out about Adam and Eve at the very beginning. What led to death and disintegration of the fabric of culture? Indulging in their feelings. Feelings, intuitions, and emotions are inputs that should be fully heard, but they must never govern our behavior. Because God instrumented the way that the world ought to work and the way in which we ought to live, and we ignore it to our own detriment. And that's why it's so important that we're not conformed to the pattern of this world or even our emotions, but ultimately that we're transformed by the renewing of our minds. Another series that we did this year was called Common Questions. And we like to employ all sorts of different teachers to help us learn some really challenging and difficult topics from the Bible. So one of the things that we did is we implored some of the best theologians and spokespeople of our day. And so, like we learned from Spider-Man, do you guys remember this? We talked about how important it is that with great power comes great responsibility. And every single one of us has great power because of the gifts and talents and abilities that God has given us. And it's true. It really is wisdom from Uncle Ben when he said, take seriously all the gifts and abilities and talents that God has given you, because God expects a lot from each one of us. And do you guys remember Cheech and Chong? We talked about this twice this last year. What do we learn from them, right? They were looking for experiences that were heavy because they were meaningful, and that's what they looked towards. They looked for to build their life on. And we use that to talk about the theological idea in the Old Testament of God's glory. It's the exact same thing. It's the idea of something being heavy, of significance, that really is worthy of building your life on. Because the truth is, every one of us builds our life on something, right? And we all try and find something that's heavy, that's meaningful, and that guides our life. Well, it wasn't all fun and games as we did Common Questions, because we talked about some really serious stuff too, and we used illustrations about how when we don't regard the instrument of God's divine likeness that he made each one of us in, how our priorities can topple, and we get furious about the lion Cecil being shot in Africa on a legal hunt, but we don't pay much attention to babies not only being killed and butchered, but their body parts being sold also. Well, I didn't want to go. I misplaced these two slides because I meant to put that one after this. But I think the funniest video clip that we played all year was from Planes, Trains, and Automobile, talking about God's hell is like it's a warning sign trying to help you understand that you're left to your own divides, you're heading towards disaster. And this clip illustrates that so well.
Joker wants to race.
Don't race. That's ridiculous.
All right, come on. Let's go. Let's go.
Put your window down!
He wants something.
He's probably drunk.
You're going the wrong way! What? You're going the wrong way!
He says we're going the wrong way.
Oh, he's drunk. How would he know where we're going?
Yeah, how would he know? Thank you. Thanks a lot. Terrific.
Thank you.
What a moron.
You're going in the wrong direction. You're going to kill somebody. You're going the wrong way!
Fuck, what? Fuck!
Why?
Don't ignore clear warnings. Well, speaking of warnings, we try and give you fair warning every year of Man Day. And fortunately, we have not had any accidents. One of the funnest things that we do all year long is our Man Day that we do out in Markleyville. And it's become really an amazing event that Pastor John puts on with Pat Baginski. And it's a lot of fun. It's a barbecue and a trap shoot. And the guys have a great time. I think one of the things that people most appreciate about Sierra Community Church, even if you don't go to church here, people in our community, is our children's ministry, which is an amazing thing. And Lori does a phenomenal job putting together an amazing program all year long for our kids and the staff that she trains. And of course, the highlight, one of the biggest highlights, and it's an all-church event, is our Vacation Bible School. And they do a phenomenal job. I don't know if Lori's here or not, but all the staff, everybody that helps out, thank you guys very, very much. Amazing thing. One of the other things that we've done over the last couple of years that I have really enjoyed personally is Corbett, our youth pastor, has put together a father-daughter dinner, and it's right around Valentine's Day, and you guys will see it on the calendars here in February, and it's become one of the highlights for me as a father. I have five kids, but only one daughter, and it's a night that both of us really look forward to, and they've done a great job with it. Well, you come to church and you get lots of different things, but one of the things that we try and do is give you some health tips during the year, too. You guys remember this? So we were talking about things that are unexpected at the beginning of the year, and we talked about this 104-year-old woman, Elizabeth Sullivan, who told CNN this week that she's been drinking 3 Dr. Peppers a day for decades and that she's never been to the hospital unless it's to give birth or to have her tonsils removed. And that's not all. In one of history's great drop-the-mic moments, Sullivan boasts to CNN that she's had 2 doctors who have told me that if I drink it, I will die, but they died first, right? So who knew that the key to longevity is drinking 3 Dr. Peppers a day? Well, I followed that one up a couple weeks later by talking about the hidden word in exercise. Do you guys remember this? That exercise, eggs are sides for bacon. The key to exercise is eating a lot of bacon. Well, John followed that up the next week with a doctor's note which said, what fits your busy schedule better, exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? So we gave you some health tips, too. This year we had a change in our staff. Karen, who has been faithful not only as our office administrator for so many years, she has also been sort of the backbone of joy to our staff because of the many challenges, physical and personal challenges, that she's had to undergo. And that smile that you see is genuine. And every person on our staff I can think of, we complain during the year about something, but not one of us, not Ralph, is this true? Am I lying? Not one of us can think of a single thing that this woman has complained about. And I've been here for 8 years, and I have never heard her complain about any of the circumstances that she has had to endure or work through and the physical challenges. And she was a joy to come in and see week in and week out. Karen still plays a part in staff, but she's retired, and her smile's even bigger because she's retired and doesn't have to put up with us anymore. And we found a fantastic person to come in and fill part of her shoes, which is Tammy Kirchable. So, Karen, thank you very, very much for years of service here. All right, we talked about Jacob and what a complicated life that guy had. And that picture of that knot, man, he was tied in knots. And I think a lot of us feel like that in our lives, too. He made a lot of disastrous decisions. And one of the things we found out from him at the very end of his life was this really funny perspective that he gained that we find out about in the book of Hebrews, where he looks back over his life, and even in spite of all the poor choices he made, he still saw that God never left him and that God played the role of a shepherd guiding him, even when he went astray. And we talked about how hard it is to be a shepherd taking care of sheep that don't know the danger that they put themselves in. And I gave you this quote from someone who was an actual shepherd talking about how difficult it is and how dumb sheep are and how humbling that is for us to come to realize in our own life. We went from him to talking about Joseph. And Joseph, talk about a life of turmoil. And yet, Joseph in so many ways doesn't lose perspective. How does that happen? Well, in the title of this, we said, when you're in a canyon and you can't see ahead in life, always look up and find God and allow him to be your source of strength day by day. Dan did a great job talking about what this looks like. He says, leave the outcomes. You just be faithful. You put one foot in front of the other, trusting God, and you allow him to take care of the ultimate destination. He says, feelings of God's love and presence, they do come and go. And don't let those feelings ever fool you into thinking that God has abandoned you or left you. And he says, don't fear circumstances, especially in your family. When there's loved ones that you love and you cry out for that may make decisions that alienate themselves, that alienate them from both you or from God. And Dad had this great quote. He says, that means if right now, today, you're in the pit and you're crying out in neglect, why? And you feel completely alone, you're not. Because Christianity is the only faith that ever claims God, their God, has suffered. That God has gone into that pit, and God is there in the dark beside you. God knows what it's like. God suffered and suffers with you. That's good news, and we saw that again and again. Another message, if you're looking for something to go back and listen to, Dan did a message just after this about living in a sexualized culture and dealing with sexual temptation. That was one of the most downloaded messages we did all year. And it's on our website also. Highlight of the year for kids and for so many adults in our church is our Navajo project that we do. So what does this have to do with our Navajo project? This is a picture of our youth pastor, Corbett, who, taking our high school students out to the reservation this year, after the first day, ended up in the hospital because of a stomach disorder that was really, really bad, and we didn't know what the outcome would be. And it was, you know, if you're a parent like I was that has two kids on that trip, that's kind of a nerve-wracking thing. The leader of the trip isn't with your kids traveling, you know, through the desert Southwest. But I think most of the other parents, like myself, actually didn't worry at all. Because one of the great things about our student ministries is Corbett's has built a fantastic team of volunteers. And this is true of almost every one of our ministries here, is if the leader of that ministry was gone tomorrow, our ministries would carry on well because we work hard to train the people under us to make ministry happen, whether we're there or not. Highlight for me, I got to go on the adult Navajo trip this year and was reminded again of how many amazing, talented, and just great people of character that we have in our church. And I had a great time. Of course, the person that puts together all of our mission stuff is John Aldax. And so one of the things that is, John has me come out as often as I can, and I do devotion stuff in the morning and sometimes at night because John's got so many other details that he's worried about. But one of the things I make sure I do is I have John come, and he's an amazing, I mean, people who go out there, Greg will tell you, good food, Greg? We don't miss a beat, do we, man? This is good food. John's an amazing cook, but he's so busy, he doesn't like to do the spiritual stuff. He doesn't like to do the devotional stuff. But I make sure every year I have John, it's like pulling teeth, to come and share about missions and why he does what he does and what the impact of his years of going out there has been. And so he always says, fine, I'll come this morning. So he comes and he leads, and inevitably, every time he does, everybody will tell you, it's the best morning we have together, isn't it, Greg? It's amazing. John does a great job sharing. And primarily, he shares around his life verse, which he has found has guided him in his missions. And it's why he's able to go back year after year and minister to people that are very skeptical of outsiders. And his verses are from the book of Proverbs. It says, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablets of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. And that, if you look at John's life and his ministry, is certainly true. Well, we finished the year by talking about Moses, and probably the most among the most powerful messages we heard was from John talking about the whole idea of Passover, of God moving people in Egypt from slavery to freedom, and that that freedom didn't come for free. And part of receiving God's salvation wasn't just that you get a get-out-of-jail-free card, but God does something to allow us to experience salvation. But that means that you don't get to determine that path to salvation and forgiveness. We have to respond to God on his terms, or we don't get what he has to offer. Another thing we talked about in the life of Moses was we talked about how God, we all experience testing in our life. And God does it not for his benefit to find out what's inside of us, because he knows what's inside of us. God allows us to go through difficult times so we can look in ourselves and see what our lives are really built on. And hopefully when we find out that we're out of adjustment, that gives us the opportunity to realign our lives with God. I don't know if you guys remember, but we sent a missionary from our church, a doctor, Bruce Doherty, down to Mexico a number of years ago. And it was pretty neat because this year we got to have Bruce back and talk about the work that he's doing with the Tarahumara Indians. They're amazing stuff that he's doing. And if you want his newsletter or information about what he's doing, the pastors would be happy to give you that information. I think it might be on the rack out front too. One of the neat things, because of the faithfulness of the people in our church and some adjustments that we've made in our budget, we've expanded our missions budget. And we've taken two people that have grown up in our church that have been serving faithfully for the last couple of years. Jordan Morgan, who's been serving in Thailand, and we're underwriting a portion of sending him back to Thailand again for the third time. And also Michelle Carter, who's been working with YWAM in a number of different projects. And she is going with Titus Task Force to South Africa to work for a time. And it's a neat privilege that we have to be able to partner with them. Last thing I want to share with you. 81 slides, baby, we did it. From the common questions thing, we've talked about money probably every other year or so since I've been here. It's a hard subject to talk about. And it's funny because the slide that I have used, funny how they always make me talk about money. They give the young guy the difficult task. But I got to talk about stewardship this last year. I love the music. So what not to do with your money came from 2010 from a Dan message about money. And it's every time we've done this, I think about this and about money. And money is a tool and a test. It's a tool to be used for God's purposes in your life. That's also a test of our character, our values, and our priorities and responsibilities. I put this in here because it's a difficult thing to talk about. But our church and our ability to do ministry that we do both here in town and especially around the world happens because of one thing, and that's the generosity of you guys that help not only pay our salaries but pay the electric bills and pay for our mission stuff that we do all year long. So thank you guys so much for your faithfulness that allows us to enjoy all of the neat things that we do. So I have no idea how I got these two typos in here. 5 before you leave for 2014 should be 2015. And for the sake of time, I'm going to skip this one slide. I think it might be in your notes. But I put this in here just to help you think about, you know, before you move into 2016, it's always good to take stock of this last year. And inevitably, there's practices and habits and attitudes that we accumulate that aren't healthy, that make it difficult for us to not only hear the voice of God in our life, but to follow him well. And we need to, like this quote here talks about in marriage, we need to take the trash out regularly because we have conflict in our lives. And C.S. Lewis talks about this so well. And he just says, progress means getting nearer to the place where you want to be. And if you've taken a wrong turn, then to go forward does not get you any nearer. If you're on the wrong road, progress means doing an about turn and walking back to the right road. We've all seen this when doing arithmetic. When I have started the sum the wrong way, the sooner I admit this, confess, right, and go back and start again, the faster I shall get on. True of math, true of our lives. So, and as you go forward this year, a number of you will make commitments, and I hope the thing that you would commit to doing, because the scripture is our guide and has been our guide all year through all of these different things that we've done, I hope that you might consider making a commitment to spending more time in God's word and allowing God's voice through it to guide and direct you. Thank you guys for your faithfulness. It's been a privilege on behalf of the staff to serve you this year. God bless you and have a great new year. If our ushers will come forward, we're going to continue our worship this morning with our offering. God bless you guys. Have a great week.